Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by PwC. When unprecedented times are all the time, it's time to start walking the talk. Leaders like you turn to PwC to see and stay ahead. Upskill your workforce, use intelligent automation, and transform big ideas into breakthrough reinvention. Explore the human-led, tech-powered solutions that help you reinvent. It's all part of the new equation. Learn more at pwc.com.
From the Palmetto Swamps to the Piney Woods to the Oak Flats, you're listening to the Louisiana Bowhunter Podcast. Come on.
You're listening to the Louisiana Bowhunter Podcast, presented by Scree Gear, and it's the middle of November, and as my kids remind me pretty much on a daily basis, we're a week away from Thanksgiving break, and that's not only a busy time during deer season, but it's also the week before Black Friday, and as everyone knows, Black Friday online shopping deals are a very big deal, and Scree has their annual Black Friday sale going on the 23rd through the 30th, 65% or up to 65% off site-wide. And the cooler thing is some of the bonus perks that they're doing during the Black Friday sale. You'll get free shipping on all orders. You'll get a 5% credit of your total spend. So when you make a purchase, you will get a follow-up email with a basically an e-gift card equaling 5% of however much you just spent towards another purchase. And if you spend over $500, you'll get a free pair of the Accelerator Merino socks and the Ibex Merino neck gaiter. If you spend over $1,000, you'll get a pair of the Merino Velocity gloves, a Merino balaclava, and a Timber Hitch belt as kind of a spending gift for Black Friday. So it's a big sale going on, and like I said, I know a lot of people are very familiar with saving a lot during this time of the year with Black Friday and Cyber Monday and all that, and I'm sure we'll be telling you about Cyber Monday deals coming up soon with that too. But if you're looking to get some early shopping for holidays done, or if you're just looking, we've had a little bit of cold weather in our area. If you decided you need a few more pieces of gear for hunting season, you can save big with the Black Friday sale coming up. And shop online, follow them everywhere, find out about the gear, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, all those outlets, find out all you need to know about the gear, and then shop online at ScreeGear.com. I guess first thing to mention here is we're late as far as our normal schedule for people that are used to following and listening to us on a schedule, but we're here. Levi and Colin are here with me. Say hello.
Hello. What's going on, guys?
We're late because Colin and I just got back from our trip to Kansas. We got back at the end of last week, and we were kind of traveling on Thursday and just couldn't get it all lined up for a Friday pod. So you're going to get two this week, Monday and Friday. And I would like to say that we were really busy getting deer out of the woods and all of that kind of thing, and so we just didn't
out of the area we were hunting in.
Yeah, just didn't have time to do a podcast because we were so covered up in deer and filling tags, and that's not what happened. It actually is probably more of the grinding it out / just frustrated and not in the mood is really more of the reason why we didn't get one recorded last week. But something that's kind of interesting, I think that we can touch on is I think that primarily the problem that we had on our hunt was weather patterns were really bad for November in the Midwest. We hunted 7 days. Did we hunt 7 or 8 days? Either way,
8 days.
We 7 or 8 days, and I think maybe one of those days, and then one morning after the one good day, did we have temperatures and weather that was even remotely, and it wasn't great. I mean, it was like 40 degrees.
Yeah, we saw 40 like once.
And the majority of the rest of the time, it was in the 70s, even bumping 80 during the day, and the wind blew out of the south all but one day that we were there. Even on the cold day, it blew out of the south. And it was blowing 15 to 25 the majority of the time. We had really tough conditions, and, you know, it's not often that you can hunt November the 2nd through the 10th or the 9th in Kansas and not really see any rut activity. I mean, we saw one big buck one day. We literally only saw one, you know, rack buck. I mean, we saw a couple little small, not even basket racks, just a little small fork horn, 4 or 6 points. But rack buck, I'm going to say like 3 years old or older, we only saw one, and it was a giant. It was a really big deer, and it was kind of nudging the doe around, but it was more like he came out into a bean field last 30 minutes of light, and there was a doe out there, so he went over there and bumped her around a little bit. He wasn't, you know, getting after it. And we didn't see the scraping activity. Was just hit or miss. There'd be a fresh scrape here and there. We didn't see bucks cruising. We didn't see deer responding to call. We didn't see anything that you normally see. And I, you know, they had a tremendous drought this year in Kansas, but it rained 3 of the days we were there, and they've gotten a little bit of rain the week before. So the drought, the conditions had kind of been taken care of, I guess. I don't know if an entire spring and summer of drought had changed things on the normal calendar, so to speak, or how much it was just simply the weather. But it was tough hunting, and there's not really a lot of stories to tell from that. But I do think it kind of lends itself to a conversation for Louisiana, in that we're actually we're having really good weather, in my opinion. Y'all agree?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, compared to a number of hunting seasons that I can think of in the past, I mean, it was 33 degrees here this morning, and it's going to be cool all week. I don't know what it was like while we were gone, but we had a lot of cool days in October, cooler than average days in October, and cooler weather happening now in early to mid-November, cooler than normal. I mean, I think I'm seeing lows in the 30s 4 or 5 times this week, and that's – we don't normally get that. And I keep kind of crossing my fingers hoping that I'm not going to pull the weather back up and see that it's drastic, like you, all right, you've had enough, now back to normal. But I'm curious, Levi, what – Are you seeing different deer movement patterns? Colin and Levi both. I mean, are you seeing different deer movement patterns for this time of the year, given the weather that we're having? The hunt is over for the right insurance carrier for all of your needs. Whether it's your personal, commercial, or agricultural needs, Jake Slocum at American National will have you covered. With over a decade of experience and multiple offices across the state, he'll take care of all of your needs. Whether it's auto, home, life, business, or farm, Jake Slocum at American National has you covered. Call or text 318-255-0096 today for a free assessment. Jake Slocum, American National Insurance, more than just your insurance provider.
I wouldn't say like from on a yearly year to year basis, no, but they did move really, really well this weekend. I saw a lot of deer. Saw 8 does and yearlings Saturday morning, and Saturday afternoon I saw 8 does and yearlings, different spot, and had a spike kind of chasing them around. And I mean, he was chasing them around, but in our part of the country, that's super early, and those does were pretty much looking at him like, what the hell are you doing? Mm-hmm. I guess he got the cold snap and he's ready to go. So I did get a picture of a shooter in daylight Saturday afternoon too at another spot. So it was a really good weekend. We saw deer all weekend on our place. So
it's funny you say, I saw my son and I went hunting this morning and we saw a spike, and I didn't put much thought to it, but in context of this conversation, he acted like he was cruising. Like his body language and just the way he moved through, we were just in a little corner of hardwoods between two thick pine thickets, and he came out of one and cruised down through where we were, and off in, I don't really know where he went, but I'm assuming off into the other. But he kind of had that demeanor about him. And but at the same time, I've got a little group of punk teenagers that it's about 4 or 5 of them. Sometimes it's 4, sometimes it's 5. And they're all like little 2.5-year-old, 4 points, 5 points, stuff like that. And they're still running together. I've gotten their picture. I think I got their picture Thursday night and several times last week. And they're all still running together. Now, where I'm at, we typically have some rut activity around Thanksgiving. That's only 2 weeks away. So, I don't know.
I saw, I had pictures of 2 shooters. One of the ones that I got Saturday afternoon, I guess it was about 4:30 when he came out, when I got a picture of him. The weekend before last on Saturday, had 2 shooters on the same camera, and I think one of the ones I got a picture of this weekend, it's one of those deer. He's a little bit further away from the camera. I couldn't really tell, but they were definitely together. Like, one came out at like, yeah, one came out and was kind of out in front of the camera just milling around on some acorns right there for, you know, 4 or 5 minutes, and then the other one came in same direction, so they obviously kind of came from the same spot. So,
yeah, I'm not seeing any like rut activity with this weather. What I think I'm seeing more of is just daylight activity with the weather.
Yeah,
I mean, I think,
yeah,
it's been pretty good. I mean,
well, that, you know, that kind of brings up an interesting something that's interesting to me, and I always kind of ponder this. You know, people debate, camp talk debate a lot about what brings on the rut, you know, what kicks the rut off. And so you've got factors like full moon phases or moon phases, having something to do with the amount of light that, yeah, what do they call it? I can't think of the name of it now, but it's something to do with the amount of light that a deer's getting in day that triggers estrus with does. And then, you know, everybody seems to, you know, you're looking for that kind of that window where you're used to seeing rut activity in your area. And then you're trying to triangulate that with a weather front. And so I think it gets passed off in general conversation a lot of times, like that cold front's going to really get the rut going. And we even said that in Kansas. We just kept hoping for a cold front, or wishing we could stay long enough, because they got a hell of a one the day after we left. But, you know,
it's got to be wide open right now.
But I think if you look at what's going on, and maybe I'm just saying the obvious, or maybe I'm just picking it apart, but to what you just said, Colin, is it really changing the actual estrus cycle that brings on the rut, or is it just making the deer more active so you're seeing that progressive change in their behavior? You're able to see it because the deer are moving more. You know, I mean, is it, you know, I mean, does a buck or a doe, either player in the equation, does a cold weather front actually physiologically, biologically get them going, or does it just get them up on their feet so they're interacting with each other? You're seeing their activity more, and so therefore you're actually witnessing what you normally don't see from nocturnal deer. What's your opinion?
A little bit of both.
What do you think, Levi?
Hey, it's Brian Chamberlain with Movement Mortgage. We're happy to be back for a second year supporting Louisiana Bowhunter. Just want to let you know that we're here for all of your mortgage needs, whether it's a purchase, a refinance, a renovation loan, or to take equity out of your home. We're also an equal opportunity lender, so whether you shoot a crossbow, a compound bow, a fixed blade, or an expandable, we're here for all of your mortgage needs. You can reach us at 504-228-3780 or at chamberlainteam@movement.com. Movement Mortgage, NMLS number 39179, Brian Chamberlain, NMLS number 114586, licensed in Louisiana, Texas, Mississippi, and Florida.
I don't know. It's, I mean, you hear people say that, you know, the ruts, you know, based on the moon or whatever, but as far as, it's no secret, and I actually read an article, I guess, last year that the MSU Deer Lab put out. It was an article or like a Facebook post or something that stated that they had no correlation between weather and deer movement. Like, they, and I had a lot of questions about this because they stated that they had all these deer collared or whatever, and they tracked all their movements, and they couldn't find a pattern with, you know, with cold fronts or high pressure systems getting deer up on their feet more. But I had the main question I had about all that, you know, and this is kind of a dumb comparison, and y'all may laugh at this, but like when us as human beings get out, you just say it's, you know, it's kind of a crappy day. It's real cloudy. It's, you know, hot for the fall or whatever, you know, people tend to kind of like lay around, you know, they're, if you go out like in the summertime or in the springtime when it's real pretty outside, you know, people tend to be more active. Now, I'm not saying deer and humans are exactly right, but I think, because I kept up with weather patterns and how many deer I saw for, I did it for probably 8 to 10 years, probably. Every time I hunted, I would write down the barometric pressure, the moon, the wind speed, the average temperatures for that day, what the actual temperatures were for that day. And I will argue until I'm blue in the face that cold weather or high pressure systems gets deer up on their feet every time.
Yeah, that's what I would have said too. I find it interesting that they said it doesn't have any correlation.
But but my argument to that is yeah, I'm sure they get up. They have to get up and move around and eat.
Yeah,
they're going to. It doesn't matter. I mean, that's like all of us. You know, you're not gonna stay in your bedroom all day just because it's cloudy outside. You've got to go out and get something to eat.
Well, yeah, I mean, even if you do lay around on the couch or lay around in the bed and watch TV all day, you're going to get up and go to the bathroom, go to the kitchen, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you're not you, but I mean, that's kind of a good, my, what I was going to say about that. First of all, from time to time I hear about studies, scientific, biological, you know, biology, different places. MSU is one of the common ones that don't make a lot of sense to me from the real world experience that I've had and that I have heard from people that I've hunted with and, you know, whatever, my whole life, they just don't make sense. And it calls into question, like, what real world variables is their study not taken into account? Because I'm with Colin. I just find that hard to believe, because I don't think I could ask anyone that I would, you know, find myself in this conversation with who would agree or disagree with the idea that cold weather and high pressure systems, you catch more fish, you hear more turkeys, you see more deer, everything. I mean, the woods come to life on days like that. And I think, you know, the human example that we were just talking about lends itself to an interesting point. Maybe the variable that they're not figuring into that is, yeah, they get up, but do they get up and walk a 50-yard circle and lay back down? Exactly. And, I mean, are they calculating any pattern to the movement? Okay, so, and here I am kind of assuming without knowing what's in that study, but, you know, are they saying, okay, the deer got up and he physically got up, the radio collared animal, he physically got up and moved on average within the same amount of times on this day as he did this day. But are they calculating the distance he traveled, you know, or any pattern to that movement? Because that deer could stay in a 25-acre thicket and change beds four different times, but just, you know, not move around. But, you know, and then on the high-pressure day, he gets up and ventures, actually moves twice as far and beds in a whole nother location during the middle of the morning or something. My point about the rut is, if there's any truth to that, well, then if a buck is, we all know, you know, generally what the idea, the concept behind the rut is with the bucks and the does. So, you know, if you've hunted for any amount of time, you know that when we get to that period of time, the bucks are keeping tabs with the does. They're staying downwind of them. They're pretty much always right there close, you know. And at some point, they actually make themselves visible because things get going to the point that they just can't help themselves and they actually, you know, pursue the doe. But they kind of hang around them. So if the does aren't moving much and the bucks are bedded in that area,
yeah.
Well, then you're seeing no rut activity. They don't have to check scrapes. They know where the does are, and they're not going very far. Then you get a cold front, and those does are up making a huge loop around their home area, feeding, you know, getting up, moving around because of the cold weather, because of the high pressure, because of everything. And now all of a sudden the bucks are losing track with where the does are, and they're having to cruise around and find them. That seems like a logical deduction of the whole thing. Yeah,
and to add to that, like, and I'm sure most people wouldn't, and everybody's got their opinion, everybody's entitled to their opinion, I would imagine most people probably wouldn't argue the other side of the spectrum on the weather for movement of deer, but if anybody out there that's listening does, I would challenge you to sit over, like, we've got some food plots on our property, like, that we never hunt. They're there strictly for the deer to eat out of. And, you know, on a bluebird afternoon in December with the highs in the low 50s, bluebird day, zero cloud cover, I almost guarantee you every time you drive by that food plot, you will see deer out in those food plots.
Well, for people that hunt food plots and feeders and corn piles and food source, that even a natural food source, if you hunt them regularly, early in the fall when you have warm days, your hunt is based around like those last 30, 45 minutes. That's when the deer are coming there. But then you get a cold front and it's 55 degrees at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and you got a little north wind blowing and a high pressure, and the first deer shows up to feed at 4:30.
Or 3:30.
It happens all the time. And you've been hunting them, you know, it's probably not that uncommon amongst, you know, a big proportion of our listeners. You got your hunting, imagine your hunting lease environment where you've only really got access to a handful of stands, or it's pine thicket where you don't really have a lot of places to put stands. So you're kind of hunting a lot of the same places a lot of the time. You know, maybe you got three or four stands for different wind, but you're still kind of hunting those food source kind of spots, and you end up hunting them most every weekend in some facet. You can't tell me that there's not a trend amongst this weekend. It was warm, south winds, and I saw a handful of deer right at dark. But then this next weekend, we got great weather, and I'm running deer off of my corn pile going in to hunt at 3:30 in the afternoon. Whether it's your hunting truck, the side-by-side you're pulling behind your truck, your home, life, business, or farm, Jake Slocum has you covered. Call or text Jake Slocum at American National Insurance at 318-255-0096 today for a free assessment. Jake Slocum, American National Insurance, more than just your insurance provider. Or as soon as I got in the tree, I got does feeding, you know, early and deer. I mean, the deer activity is just different. I guess circling kind of all the way back around to how this started, you know, does the cold weather increase the rut? And my final say on that, or I say not increase the rut, but speed up the rut or anything early with the rut, I don't think it does, but I think that deer by nature, the studies going back to the scientific studies show that as soon as a deer loses its velvet, that its hormones start to change and it starts to go from, you know, kind of basically one animal to the next. It's completely different. And they say that that happens, that hormonal change in the deer happens when they lose their velvet. So that says that the bucks are kind of always ready to act this way. It just kind of ramps up and down with doe activity and doe estrus activity. So if you get a cold front right now on November the 13th, you're not used to seeing rut until November the 25th or later. But you get really cold weather on November the 13th, and you've got does up moving all the way up into the mid-morning where you haven't had it all year, it makes sense that you're at least going to see some young bucks messing with them, following them around, you know, cruising around, looking for those does that he's used to, you know, because I just believe they kind of have a pattern to it, you know. I don't know. Y'all have anything to add?
No, I mean, I agree.
Well, we're talking about that now because we have officially got to the point in the season where every deer around knows it's hunting season, I'm sure, because everybody's in and out of the woods and rifles are not, well, the single shot rifle that we call a primitive weapon season.
That's opened, not primitive.
The most unprimitive of primitive weapon seasons opened this weekend. And if they didn't know by then, just judging by the sounds from my backyard, they know now because it's been plenty of firepower in the woods now, and so you're kind of like, now it's like, oh, we're really seeking the rut to kind of offset the pressure that is inevitable once you've had this many days of the season and people in and out. We're gonna talk to Wade Butcher, owner of Swamp Donkey Archery, and just talk to him a little bit about his season, about his shop, some of the bows that he sells. He sells a brand called Athens Archery that some of you may not be real familiar with, but we're going to talk to a little bit about them, so let's go talk to Wade. Hey guys, hunting season is finally upon us. We're starting to feel some of that fall weather, and if you've had some success or you're expecting to and you're looking for taxidermy work, contact our friend Brian Anders at the Taxidermy Shop. Located at 2582 Highway 48, Liberty, Mississippi, conveniently located right in between Centerville, Liberty, and Gloucester. Whether you're chasing deer and ducks in the fall, big gobblers in the spring, or you land that trophy fish, give Brian Andrews a call at the Taxidermy Shop at 601-248-6945. The Taxidermy Shop is family-owned and operated, not too big, not too small, offering quality work in a timely manner. Call Brian Andrews at the Taxidermy Shop, 601-248-6945, or check them out on Instagram at the Taxidermy Shop. Wade, how's it going, man?
Man, going pretty good. Really ain't got no complaints. How you gents doing?
We're doing good, buddy. How's your bow season been so far?
It's been a struggle, I ain't gonna lie. It's hadn't been the best one, but I guess that's why they call it hunting and not killing, right?
I guess so. It helps to have a little killing in there though. Kind of makes you feel like you're doing something right. At least an yeah. opportunity at it, you know.
Yes, sir, for sure.
We were just having we were talking a little bit about weather patterns, and we just came back from a early November Kansas hunt, and the weather was really not good for us, and we didn't have a great hunt. And we were just talking about, you know, we're having a pretty cool fall. Actually, I'm surprised to hear you're struggling, because most people are having a pretty good year down here. I think our weather's been pretty good, and we got more cold mm-hmm. temperatures this week. We were talking a little bit about
this week has definitely been what we needed for sure.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit about how weather, specifically colder weather, how it affects rut patterns, or does it affect rut patterns? Is, you know, and kind of our kind of take on that conversation was that the rut is kind of what it is, based off a lot of different factors, and the cold and the high pressure systems and that come with the cold and all that are really more of a deer movement factor in the whole equation. Yeah. And whereas,
yep.
you know, a 35 degree day doesn't make a deer rut, but a 35 degree day makes a deer move, which allows you to see them act a little bit more naturally. And maybe you're seeing pre-rut activity that you're not used to seeing this time of the year or this early in the year, because you don't always get cold temperatures. You agree with that?
Yes, sir. I definitely do.
What, first of all, I mentioned, as I was bringing you on, I mentioned that you're the owner of Swamp Donkey Archery. Tell people where you're located.
Okay, so the closest big town for anybody that don't, I'm out in the sticks, to be honest. The closest big town's Shreveport. So I'm like about halfway between Shreveport and Minden, just a little north of the interstate from there. I'm between what they call Dixie Inn and Cotton Valley.
So what's your typical rut in that area, date-wise?
Man, I see, like, I usually see two different ones, you know, the early and the late. And it's like it's weird. It's like it's kind of the I-20 seems to be, from what I've been seeing, it's kind of like a border there, which is kind of odd. Like, my normal rut over the last – 15 years has been like last week. It's been like November 6th through the 10th. I have probably, between me and my wife and my kids, we have four deer on the wall that were all killed between November 8th and November 11th, I want to say. And every one of them were right behind the doe or was full rut. Glands dark and stinking, neck swole up. Then I'll have the second one right there around that Thanksgiving, the week of Thanksgiving.
So we're right there on the back side of that first one. So have you been seeing that this year?
I didn't see as much rut activity this year early. Like, I actually took off Monday and Tuesday from my day job. And because that fell right in my dates of when I've been killing all my deer, and I did not see there was no rut activity, no scrapes, no bucks chasing does that I seen, like, anything. And this week, since we've got the little cool snap, I've started to see scrapes coming up. I've seen over the weekend, I've seen two different little bucks chasing does over this weekend.
Hmm.
So it was, yeah, which was, you know, kind of strange because it's always been, and it didn't seem like the temperature really affected them the past previous years, but I did notice, especially on Monday and Tuesday when I was off, it was like dead, nothing.
Well, we were in Kansas where I've killed it's either five or six deer that I've killed in the Midwest on November the 8th over the years. And we were there from the we traveled on the 2nd. We were there from the 3rd through the 9th, and we didn't see basically any real rut activity at all. Now, it was bad weather. Bad weather for deer hunting anyway. And so I don't know, you know, I mentioned earlier in our situation up there, I can't really correlate anything to my local area, because down here where we're at in southern Louisiana, southwest Mississippi, we don't see rut that early, but they had a tremendous drought up there all summer long, and I can't help but wonder, does the weather that you have all year, or at least spring and summer, how does that affect the fall? You know, does that change the calendar for some of your deer patterns, like the rut and all that kind of stuff? If you're in an area where you had an extreme drought all summer long, is that going to change your fall calendar? You know, is there anything like that happening in your area that could be a correlation?
That's a good point there. The one thing that I did see different this year, I know we didn't get quite as much rain, but I did see a huge acorn crop this year. It's like the woods is just like every white oak you walk under, it like feels like you're walking on ball bearings, you know, they're all over the ground. So I'm wondering if some of my not seeing anything is, or not seeing as much activity is, you know, they're feeding on the acorns more than anything else. And there's just so many of them, they're not having to move. So I'm wondering if with the point that you're making, if it's a real big drought, real bad drought, that affect acorn crop where you were at? I mean,
It affected the ag, which is, you know, they don't, acorn crop is not a huge deal. I mean, there are, where we're at, there are some acorns. It's not quite the prairie country, but yeah, there was a lot of insurance crop in that area.
Gotcha. Okay. I see.
So how palatable, I'm not a farmer, right? So I don't know, but. So I go out there and hunt, and I'm looking at these cut corn fields and these dried up bean fields, and there's still a lot of food, but how palatable is it to the deer if it's been in a drought all summer? And I don't know.
Got a good point.
So one of the things I wanted to ask you about, your primary line of bows that you sell at Swamp Donkey is Athens, correct?
Yes, sir, that's it.
And I don't think that, I would imagine that there's probably more people that listen to this than not that probably haven't heard of Athens or haven't heard much about Athens. So I wanted to give you a minute to just kind of tell us about, you know, Athens bows, what they've got out new and stuff like that that's going through your shop.
Cool. That'll work. Appreciate that opportunity there. Man, I tell a lot of people that Athens is one of the biggest biggest kept secrets of the archery world. And when I'm saying secret, I'm not meaning because nobody talks about it. It's because nobody really knows about it down here in the South. I think, you know, more up north because they're based out of New York. There's a lot more dealers and a lot more people that shoot them more up north. I've just been dealing with them for 4 years now. And, I've sold a good bit around here. So we're kind of starting to get the word out about them. Athens is a great company. It's still considered what I would consider a smaller company. Real good friends with the owners there. They're like super high quality boats. I mean, nice machined aluminum risers, super smooth drawing cams. Their main lineup that they're selling right now is the Vista series. They have for the hunters that like some of the shorter bows, they have a Vista 31, which is a 31 inch axle to axle, a Vista 33, and a Vista 35. That's like their bread and butter right now. I'm currently shooting the Vista 31 for my hunting bow, and I have a Vista 35 set up for shooting some spots and 3D and stuff like that inside. There's nothing negative that I can really say about them. I've been shooting since the mid-90s. I have shot all makes, all models ever since then. I've put a lot of bows through my hand, and I don't think I'm speaking out of turn for myself when I say I seriously say that these are the best shooting bows I've ever put in my hand. They will stand toe-to-toe to any of the major name brands that's out there right now, in my opinion. They're just really good bows. Speed-wise, they're not as fast as some of the speed bows out there. We're looking at IBO, you know, we're looking like that 340 to 345 range. They got a little bit of speed to them if you want them there, but they're super smooth draw, high let-off, adjustable let-off between 80 and 90%. A lot of adjustability to it, adjustable draw mods, stuff like that. So, really good stuff. Got poundage ranges anywhere from, I want to say they start at 40 pounds and go all the way up to 80 pounds.
So, for people that aren't bow junkies like some of us are, think of one of the bigger brand name bows that you could compare it to, it just at least in look, feel, ergonomic design, you know, so kind of people can get a picture in their mind of this product.
Gotcha. If they was to look and shoot like anything that's out there right now, I would say they resemble more of an Elite. The handle is going to fit your hand a lot like an Elite does. The bit smaller grip. The draw cycle does resemble what the Elites do on the draw. You know, no vibration in the hand, stuff like that. So I think that would be a good comparison there. Some of the Elites is really close to what they look like and feel like.
Well, I had the opportunity to shoot them at the ATA show this year, and I was impressed as well. And I agree with you. They are comparable to an Elite if you were to try to compare them to another brand that people may be more familiar with. It's always interesting to me from a business perspective when you see a company, and we get so tunnel visioned, I guess, into our own little world, like you said, up north that, you know, where they're from, they have a much bigger footprint. You know, when you look at bow hunting and the bow hunting industry, you got such big players, and then you have these other names like Athens, and it's, you know, where do they gain traction? It's really cool that there's a shop here in Louisiana focused on one of those other brands, and that's pretty neat.
Yep.
Has there been any other trends just that you've seen through the shop this year that may be different from years past, and just in terms of gear that people are buying or kind of trends that are going any certain direction?
Yeah. I'm seeing a lot of people wanting to go with a little heavier airs, a little heavier hunting airs. People are starting to dabble into the high FOC airs and stuff. I've definitely seen more of that this year than I have in previous years.
So we asked this question of a lot of people, and I never remember to do it early on or anything. But what you mentioned, you're shooting the Vista 31. What is your setup otherwise? Like, what kind of arrows and broadheads and all that? What's your hunting setup?
Okay, cool. So my Vista 31, I have it's set on 35 or there we go. Well, I'm on 65 pounds. I do have it set on 90% let off. So I'm drawing, of course, 65, and I'm holding like maybe 7 pounds. I like a real high let off bow. That way, you know, if I have draw it back and hold it for, you know, 2 minutes waiting on that old buck to come out from behind the tree that he walked behind, you know, I can do it. So I shoot 29-inch draw. My arrows that I'm using this year are the Victory. I think I got the Rips, I want to say. 340 spine. They're 480 grains. I've got a, I'm wanting to say, 14% FOC. I calculated it the other day. I can't remember if it's 14 or 12, but it's pretty nice. I'm running my primary broadhead that I'm shooting this year is the Magnus 125 grain Stinger. Good fixed blade. I got it tuned real good. Flies with my field tips all the way back to 50 yards. And I'm shooting just a tad over 270. We're shooting about 272, 273. I think that's a good, that's kind of my ballpark that I like to get in. I like to see in that 270 to 280 range. If I get way over that, I'll add a little more weight to my arrow. I'm happy with that 270, 280 feet per second range there.
I can agree with you there. I like some speed, but I do think we get carried away with it a little bit, considering you know, what's effective in a real world situation. Well, that's cool.
Sure.
That's cool. Cool to learn a little bit about that. Colin texted me a question earlier today, and we wanted to kind of touch on this. It's kind of a final bit of conversation on the pod today. Just a little bit more deer hunting talk. Colin, I'm gonna let you kind of introduce this, and Wade, we're all just going to conversate, and you jump right in there if you have something to say as well.
Yeah, all right. So it's for, I mean, I kind of thought of it because, like, Levi had the shooter show up, and but it's really anybody, and it's just like the general question is, like, how do you go after a buck or deer or whatever? Like, and a lot of people are like, I'm going to go in after him or whatever. Well, like, what are you actually doing? Like, what's your thought process? So I guess I'll just ask Levi, I guess, for this scenario. Like, how are you identifying, like, where you think he's living? Is it trail cameras? Is it, like, history with your property and deer? Like, how do you go about, like, how close do you want to push into the deer? I mean, do you kind of ease in, you know, a little bit at a time, or just stuff like that?
Yeah, and I'll start this little conversation off by one good thing about, you know, typically when you're kind of dead set on targeting a specific deer, that he's probably at least 4.5 years old, sometimes 3. You know, some people don't mind shooting 30-year-olds, and I'm not judging anybody for that. But, you know, typically it's a deer that you've seen or had pictures of for a couple years, so you kind of have a general idea about where he possibly could be. That spot that I've got those two shooters on camera last weekend and got one of them Saturday afternoon, it is a spot that traditionally there's always a mature deer in there. I've, for as long as we've hunted that place, as long as you don't go in there and stomp around and all that, or even put cameras out all around this kind of thicket and just leave them alone, they're in there. I've got one camera in there on the west side of that thicket, and I just, they constantly, you see them every year, coming in and out of that thicket every year. But yeah, if I'm after a particular deer, and just say he's 5.5, and I've had pictures of him for, I typically start keeping up with a deer when he turns 3. I'm not really interested in a 2-year-old per se, but if I see a deer that's 3 years old, I'll start kind of taking note of him. I'll save some pictures of him, where they're at, where the pictures were, you know, what time the pictures were, you know, if they were at midnight or were they at, you know, right at daylight, in the mornings. You know, you can kind of make a good guess if you're seeing him, if you're getting him on camera, you know, either in daylight in the afternoons or right before daylight in the mornings, you can probably best bet he's probably pretty close somewhere right there at that time of the year. And I'm a big believer, and this isn't something that I've learned, I taught myself. Mark Drury was the first person I ever heard say it, that as long as you're not really disturbing a particular deer, they tend to show up in the same general area given a particular time of the year, whether it be pre-rut or early season. And I know that's not always the case. We do hunt in Louisiana, so our deer down here are freaking psychos. But I have had some success the past couple years of keying in on, okay, all right, this deer, got a picture of him in October at this particular spot, and into November, here he is again. And he may be half a mile or a mile from that one spot that I get him in October, but set a camera up there. That's how I killed a deer in January 2 years ago that was kind of like that, where I originally got pictures of him. It was probably about a mile from where I ended up killing him, but saw him three separate times in daylight and just moving trees around just to get where I could get a shot at him. But it's a big deal keeping up with inventory of pictures. And a lot of times it's kind of like, everybody's, I see it all the time online that, you know, somebody gets a picture of a deer at midnight and they say, oh, all my deer are nocturnal. I'm not a huge believer in that. I know deer can go nocturnal, but you got to think too, that it's been dark for, you know, this time of year, it's been dark for 5 or 6 hours. That deer could be coming from a mile, half a mile. If he's got a good travel corridor through a thick part of your property, he could be coming a lot. He can travel a long way in 5 hours. And if you're consistently getting pictures of him at midnight or all throughout the year, I'm betting that deer is probably coming from a long way, and you either need to move your setup or move some cameras around to see if you can pick him up elsewhere. So
take the same scenario, or not scenario, but just take the same question and apply it to a different set of circumstances where, let's say you're hunting a piece of property, because I agree with you in the historical factors. I mean,
I think that's like a huge like benefit.
Yeah, if you've been hunting a place for a long time,
yep,
you kind of know where your mature deer and your buck activity is going to show up at what times of the year. I mean, it's pretty, as long as there's not dramatic change on the property, you can count on a lot of that. And if you're wise about how you approach your hunting, you know, you can take advantage of that. I killed a deer on my property here. Well, it's the deer that people have heard about on the podcast numerous times that went in the lake. I took his picture for the first time on July 4th in Velvet on the far northwest corner of our property. And I took his picture a lot over there at a corn feeder, summer kind of summer feeding type pattern situation with another deer. And then in September he disappeared, and I knew where he was going to show up, and I started running cameras over there. And sure enough, I started getting his picture very, very infrequently, but I got his picture enough to know that he had changed just like they always do. He was bigger than the other deer that I had hunted on this property, but nevertheless, just because he had bigger horns didn't mean he wasn't the same kind of animal, you know, age-wise, environmentally speaking. He lives in the same place. And I ended up killing him over this one area where they always end up. They always end up there when they're rutting, and that's where he was. But going back to what I was saying, if you take this same situation for someone who's, let's say they've got a new piece of property, this is the first year they've ever hunted it, or they're hunting somewhere and they have, they're on like a 1 week hunt or something where they don't have that. And maybe they don't even have the ability to sit and wait. Like they're like, you know, I saw this big deer crossing the road and I've only got one camera and I've only got a limited, you know, limited access to all this. And I've seen this deer. I know he's there, but you know, the constraints are such that I can't rely on his history, to say he's going to be here in a month. I'm not going to be here in a month or whatever the case is. How do you strategize for kind of giving it your best effort to get on that deer and figure out, okay, I've got this one picture or I saw this deer one time from the stand or crossing the road going in and out or something. You know, now I've gone in there and I've scouted. I see what's good and what's bad about this area. Now, how do I figure him out? You know, what does that situation look like? You know, what have any of you that have a comment there, you know, what do you advise someone to go after? Because I'll say this too, before I turn that completely over to any opinions, I spent an inordinate amount of time several years ago making fun of someone in private, but nevertheless, making fun of someone that I hunted with one time who, in good fun, had...
It was probably me.
It wasn't you. someone who, you know, like got all fired up at deer camp, like, let's go after them. And I'm like, what do you mean by that? Like, are we going to strap on our freaking riot gear and just go plunge down through the woods and just go freaking flush them out and shoot them all? Like, we're bow hunting here, man. You know, like when I guess the kind of the genesis of my making fun was, like, that's such a dumbass statement when you have no plan. Your plan is to go sit in the stand. That's your plan. Like, yeah. You know, it's like we're all been sitting around the freaking strategy table getting ready to go to battle, and we've got it nailed out. We got our battle plans ready, and we're all beating our chests, and we're fixing to go rush through the door and go F some people up, you know? It was like that, and I'm like... You have no plan. Your plan is to go sit wherever the outfitter told you to sit and just sit there as long as you can and hope a deer walks by. So what are you exactly going after? You know? But to that point, like, if you are in that situation where you have limited access or you have no history or whatever, I mean, what kind of plan can you make? How can you try to give it your best effort to not just go can't kill them from the couch strategy and actually have some plan, whether it works or not, have some plan to try to be successful and do something that is at least calculated in some way to give yourself a chance?
Me personally, if I'm going to a piece of property that I've never hunted before, obviously you'll look at it on base map or Onyx or Google Earth first, but the very first thing I'm doing, if I got time to scout it out or whatever, first thing I'm doing is going and walking the property and looking for the absolute thickest and nastiest place on the property. And finding that place and I guess kind of trying to figure out how to access or where to hunt. What side of that area to hunt, how to access it on particular wind directions, that would be kind of my first thing to go do.
So you're kind of breaking it down as like, you go find that area and then that's like your starting point. So then you're like, okay, I'm just going to pretend that the deer is in here and figure out how to hunt this and then go from there. That's how you're kind of like working into it.
Yeah. Because, and you know, you may just say it's like say 80 or 100 acres and down in the middle of it, there's a big swamp that's nasty thick, that's 100% probably is the main bedding area for the deer that hunt that, that use that property. Probably the first couple sits, I'd probably sit kind of, I mean, this isn't new information to a lot of people that hunt, but I'd probably sit, you know, maybe 100, 150 yards from it, maybe the first couple hunts, and just kind of where you can sit back and see maybe more area, not just go plunge right in there where you can't see anything. I tend to be not aggressive as far as like the first couple hunts that I go hunt a new piece of property or a new area or whatever.
But even if you've seen the deer, let's just say you go to that new piece of property and you're mm-hmm. walking the west side, you know, and you don't really spook the deer. You just see a target buck feeding through a bottom or something. And you make note of, you know, what the wind situation was, what the everything was. Where do you go from there? Now, you've seen this deer. You kind of have some idea, at least of what he was doing at that time on that day in those conditions. And now you've got that much at your disposal. Where do you go from there?
Well, if you're hunting in Louisiana and you go wander on a property and you see a shooter like that walk around in the daytime, the first thing you do is go to the gas station and buy a lottery ticket. So that'd be the first thing you do. Number two,
better try to kill him right there.
Yeah,
you chase him down and go after him.
Going after him.
Your pocket knife or whatever you got on you, yeah. Because, obviously you would say, you know, all right, what time of year is it? What's he doing? Is he eating acorns? Is he cruising? Is it during the rut? Which direction is he heading? The wind? And that goes back to property knowledge. Like, okay, he's walking through this bottom, but where is he coming from? Is there a thicket where he came from? Could he be bedded in there? Where do the does like to hang out? There's all kind of scenarios and questions. But if you don't know any of that, I mean, and you see that deer walking through that bottom at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I mean, why wouldn't you go sit up on that little bottom on the same wind direction to see if you could catch him? I mean,
you'd have to start
kind of the
there.
Best information you have. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess you'd think maybe he's, if it's like midday or early, maybe he's kind of living close to that.
Could be.
Yeah.
And he's probably not pressured at all if he's doing that.
Well, that's probably not a likely scenario that I gave. So how about this scenario then? Yeah. You're driving into the location and the deer just runs across the road in front of you. So now you don't know, was he bedded right by the road and I just jumped him up? Was he crossing the road to go from bed to bed? Was he feeding in this area and I spooked him across the road? I don't know. I just know I saw a big buck jump across the road and I know which direction he went.
Pick a side. No, I mean, I think if you made the decision right there that, okay, I'm going to go after this deer, I mean, you got to get out and go look around. I mean, maybe don't go in where he's going and like keep nudging him, but you could go in the other way where he came from.
Yeah.
See, and then
I think the most likely scenario that people would resonate with in this is you get access to hunt a piece of property, a new lease, or somebody gave you permission or something, and you go in there and you throw a back horn out and you put a camera up and you get a picture of a nice buck. I don't know anything about this property. I just know that there's a good buck and I want to hunt him. Now what do I do? You know?
Yep.
And I think the mistake that a lot of people make is they try to get in a hurry and they try to just camp out on that camera. Well, he was here, so let me just, but yeah. You know, and maybe that works if you just, this whole scenario plays out where he's in a pattern and, okay, well, I know which way he approached the camera, so I'm going to get on the downwind side and, you know, I'm good. And he comes back and you kill him right off the bat. But what if you don't? And now it's like, I get a picture of him every now and then. sometimes in shooting light, sometimes not. I don't really know. Like, how do you figure him out, you know, without the luxury of the history? You know, those kind of things are probably, I think, a more likely scenario for the majority of people. Yeah. And I would say that, in observation sits, you know, strategic observation sits, being willing to hunt without expecting to kill a deer, which is hard for a lot of people because, you know, you work all week, you only get the weekends. I'm trying to make the most. I'm trying to make my highest percentage hunts every time I hunt because I only get so many of them. But being willing to go and sit somewhere with no expectation of shooting something, and really maybe not any expectation of seeing that deer, but maybe seeing other deer movement that gives you a little bit, just one more little piece of a puzzle, you know, that ends up coming together down the road somehow. And I just think that in this whole scenario, Colin, that you're presenting is, unless you have really, really concrete, and it would never be concrete, but just really, really strong historical evidence to give you, you know, that data to lean on, you just got to be patient. Because, like you said, Levi, in this scenario, regardless of what this scenario is, most likely it's whether it's a three-year-old and that's your age structure, or it's probably this target animal we're talking about. It's probably a larger deer, an older, right, smarter deer. That's the one that people are after because they've, you know, it's catching their eye or whatever. And if that's the case, you can make it almost impossible to kill him by doing some things the wrong way.
Yep. Yeah.
I mean, if he's, you know, he's an older deer, he knows what will work for him. You know, where if it's a lease and you hunt, this is where you hunt. He knows, they know where you hunt at and where, yeah, you frequent and all that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think, like you were kind of saying with the observation, you have to be willing to, like, you know, you can check some areas off as this ain't the spot, and that can be just as good as, okay, this is the spot that he's at.
Wade, answer me this, since you're just so talkative.
Yeah, I'm just messing with you. I'm just trying to learn, man.
I'm just messing with you, bro. Do you buy into? I've heard lots of old men at hunting camps in my day tell me, you know, that buck knows every time you come and go. He knows where you're at. He you know, basically, like, he knows every time you're here. You buy, yeah, into that?
Man, I think if you are doing most of your traversing in and out to your stands or whatever, close to his bedding or close to his primary area, yeah, I think he knows every time you're in and out of there. I do think some of that would be a little bit of an old wives' tale, but I think a lot of that is kind of, you know, you might, his bedding area might just be, you know, 50 yards off the road that you don't even think about, you know, when you drive in. So yeah, I think a good buck that's up close to you is definitely going to know when you're in and out. Like I've heard several people say, you know, a mature buck is a one sense animal. You know, all he needs to do is see you, smell you, or hear you, and he's done. He's gone. He knows you're there. So that's kind of my opinion on that.
I think that in the context of what I was saying, I think people tend to give deer, and this is going to be kind of a controversial way of saying this, but I think,
yeah,
people give deer a little bit too much credit in some cases. I mean,
yeah,
they can't think cognitively like a human. Now, yeah, if in my experience, especially in the South, in Louisiana, if that deer really was that keen, we'd never kill him, ever.
That's right, 100%.
I mean, that, like you said, the deer is a one-scent animal, and if he is so smart that he knows every time you're there, I mean, obviously, if he's bedding somewhere you're not expecting and you're getting right up on close, but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about these people that just think that, you know, he hears the truck going down the road and knows you're here. He hears trucks go down the road all the time. You know,
exactly. Yeah, and kind of a touching on a different subject on talking about trucks and people saying, you know, how, you know, oh man, you drove by my stand, you messed me up. You know, I work in a oil field, natural gas field, you know, during the day, and I drive by people's deer stands all the time, run deer out from under their feet, or you know, most of the time they just look at you when you drive by. You know, there's a lot of areas that do have a lot of you know, work related roads to go through it that I don't think the deer nowadays are bothered by the vehicles a lot of times. So I just wanted to kind of throw that one in there.
I think that you obviously, if you get in close enough to any deer, but specifically a more mature doe, buck, whatever, and it sees you or it smells you, then that's an obvious. But I think that, like I said, you're hunting in the South my whole life. If they were as keen as some of the wives' tales, as you put it, you know, Linda, we would never kill them because like you said it well, they're a one cent animal. And as soon as they know, they're not just going to decide, well, you know, I smelt that dude, but I'm going to go eat some of that corn anyway. They just don't do that.
That's right.
You know, I know he's in here today. He comes in here every day, and I know he's in here, but I'm just hungry. I mean, shit, I just got to eat. Like, they just don't do that, you know? They may do a little bit of that during the rut, a little bit of kind of caution to the wind, but even then, if the doe spooks, I just think that you can get away, like, I'm correlating this to the conversation in that you can get away with some stuff.
Yeah.
If you're wise about it and willing to be patient, you know, you don't have to feel like, well, crap, I done hunted this spot. I saw him and he ran off, so I better get on him and kill him quick. He knows I'm here. You know, I think like Levi said, he may not necessarily be nocturnal. He just ain't passing in front of your camera in the daylight. You know, that sounds like a real plain, logical way to say it, but there's a lot of validity to that. He may not necessarily be nocturnal. You just haven't done anything to disprove that theory other than just take his picture in front of that one camera. And what he has proven to you is he comes and eats at that corn at night. That don't mean that's all he does, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't think there's not an answer.
Yeah.
And to add on to that, we're talking about how do you go after him or whatever? Well, if he's eating at your corn pile at midnight every night, that's a pretty good area that to not hunt at, because he's obviously not there in the daylight. So see where he's coming from or where he's going and then go from there. I mean, don't just sit there and be like, oh, hopefully he messes up today. You know?
Yeah. Well, I think that's a very common hunting strategy. We throw a dart at a map board and we go sit there and hope that they mess up in that spot on that day. And, I mean, that's, you know, a lot of times that's...
Hopefully they smelled you but still wanted to come into the corn today.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of times that's just kind of what you're left with when you're, you know, you have a diverse group of people accessing the same property and freedom to go about it and do it however they choose, then, you know, you're limited. And, I mean, I'm sympathetic to that. I've hunted in that situation too, but it becomes a really hard. I don't think there's really an answer. There's a lot of ways. The only thing I would say, you know, to wrap the conversation up is just be. I just don't like hunting without a plan. Like, I'd rather not hunt. Aside from the success fail ratio that I would attach to it, completely aside from whether I think I can be successful or not, it's hard for me. You remember the 20 foot closer to God conversation that we had earlier? I'm not going to get into that because people are going to get mad at me, but I just that like I if it's a Sunday afternoon and I have no plan, then I'll just watch the 3 o'clock NFL football game, because I just, you know, I find it hard. I find it difficult to be motivated, but I also think that I have proven to myself over the years that I'm potentially doing more harm than good by just going and sitting in the woods and being 20 foot closer to God.
I'll go grab, if I don't have a good plan, I'll just go grab my stand and go sit in the yard, because I'm going hunting.
Well,
that's just me.
I mean, it's like what we said, it kind of, we were talking about in Kansas, like when you go out, you know, like with the plan, like, are you hunting because you think you're in the game, or are you hunting just to try to get lucky?
Yeah. And I've gotten weary of being able to make myself sit there if I feel like I'm hunting just to be lucky.
Right.
And I think that the moral of that story for me is that I do the amount of work that I do all year long. So I presented that as though it's a regular occurrence for me. It's not a regular occurrence for me, because I do a lot of work to make sure that when I do want to get up and go hunting, I have some idea of what's going on. And I'm not just busting up in somewhere hoping a deer comes and shows up against its nature and that I get lucky. I'm pretty much always have a plan if I choose to go hunting, and I've set myself up for that. And I think if you hunt that way, you can, I can't give you the exact answer to the conversation, you know, that we're having, because every scenario is so drastically different, can be so drastically different. But if you hunt that, if you do that amount of work, if you put that amount of effort into your hunting, you'll be able to figure it out. You'll at least be able to give yourself a fighting chance at having a plan to do something. If all you ever do is show up to the camp, cook out, drink beer, and then go sit over the same food plot or the same corn feeder every day, and you have no idea what the rest of the deer are doing all around your property, and you do see that deer jump across the road on your way in from your morning hunt, you're not going to have a damn clue how to hunt him, and you're probably going to go bust him up and run him over onto the neighbor so the neighbor can kill him. You know, but if you're, you know, if you do a little bit more in the way of observation sits and pre-planning and scouting and stuff like that, then you see that deer, and all of a sudden your mind starts racing towards all the things you've done previously, even if it's your first year on a place, all the stuff you've done previously that you can pull from to try to develop a plan of how to go after him. You know, that's kind of my final say on it.
Yep.
So, well, we're running short on time. Sorry that we're late on this episode, but we are hunters and we do hunt, so sometimes our schedule gets all messed up. Wade, thank you for jumping on. I know we didn't have a big long conversation, but I'm glad to be able to share with people about Athens and Swamp Donkey and what you're doing. Encourage people to look you up. Tell people how they can look you up and get in touch with you if they want to check you out.
Yeah, the easiest way to get in touch with me is my website, swampdonkeyarchery.com. And, of course, anybody's Facebook savvy, I'm on Facebook, too. You can look me up there. All my contact info is on my website. It's got a link to all my social medias from there, my YouTube as well. So be happy to answer any questions anybody has. Also, another thing I do is I am a archery coach as well, so if anybody's got any tips or hints or something to help me shoot a little better, I don't mind answering those either. So
I'm glad you mentioned YouTube, because I did want to make sure I didn't forget to encourage people to go look you up on YouTube, because Wade does a lot of just informative things around his shop, where he talks about different products and things that he's doing in the shop, and pretty entertaining, and spends a lot of time. You do a good job with that. I think people that like getting archery tips and watching bow builds and different things like that would really enjoy your YouTube channel. So I encourage people to go check that out.
I appreciate that, and appreciate y'all bringing me on. It was enjoyable for sure.
Yeah, man. Well, look, everybody, I want to remind you we're giving away a Buzzard Roost saddle for our gear giveaway in November. So every order placed at LouisianaBowhunter.com gets entered into the drawing on December the 1st. So every order in the month of November will be in the drawing. And if you order more than once in November, you'll get entered multiple times in the drawing. We gave away a Scree Gridlight jacket and a Louisiana Bowhunter hat to Lyndon from I shouldn't even said that because now I can't remember. Lyndon. Lyndon won it. I can't remember where he's from now. Stuck my foot in my mouth there. But that was our October giveaway. We're going to give away a huge prize package to our film festival winner at the end of the year. So I hope you got your cameras out, you're filming your hunts, getting ready to put something together to submit to that. We'll be giving more information towards the end of the year of how to submit. And you can go look up a previous podcast episode with Hunter Brown where we talked all about the regulations and rules for that. And other than that, we got some new hats coming out here in the next couple of weeks. I've been saying the next couple of weeks for a couple of weeks, but I think we are finally in production. We'll have that out. If you got a store in your area that's running low on inventory or doesn't have Louisiana Bowhunter stuff, let us know. We'd love to get some on the shelf. And if you don't, just go to LouisianaBowhunter.com. You'll get entered in the gear giveaway. So we will talk to you later this week. Thank you so much for being patient with us, and thanks so much for listening.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Louisiana Bowhunter Podcast. If you have anybody you'd like to hear on the show, reach out to us at info@LouisianaBowhunter.com. And if you want to help support Louisiana Bowhunter, go by your local archery shop and pick up some merchandise. If you don't have any at your local shop, let us know and we'll reach out to them. Or pick up your gear at LouisianaBowhunter.com and we'll ship it out to you same day. See you next week.